recording GloucesterCast 173. We have a new guest, first time guest.
So exciting.
Very exciting. And we have an announcement to make.
Yes.
We have Greg Bover with us today.
Hey, Joe.
We have Kim Smith.
Good morning, Gloucester.
Captain Pete Mondello.
Morning.
Mark Ring.
Good morning.
Absent today. Donna Ada's only from Somerville, Massachusetts.
You know, she's the only one I know who talks like that. Like, in, you know how in films that everybody talks that way, right? In Boston.
Yeah.
But I never really meet people who talk.
You know, she should. You know, that's a great. That's what I was going to say. You know, when they have these terrible, you know, these horrible Boston accents in the movies, they should bring Donna in.
They should. Agree.
Right?
Surprise Wahlberg didn't call her this week. They just started filming.
What are they filming now?
About the marathon bombing.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that was going to be a movie.
Yeah. Started this week.
I guess, and they're not going to film in Watertown. People in Watertown don't.
No, they said
them.
No.
Yeah.
They did in the end?
Yeah. They said no, and also, I think, where is it Tufts? Or with school, did the was it at Tufts? I think they're thinking. Oh, Dartmouth. They're thinking about it. They haven't decided.
Not yet. Exactly a movie I'm particularly looking forward to see.
No.
Yeah. I
not
know
so
either.
Much. No.
Tufts sell.
Wait 10 years or something.
I think it will sell everywhere else better than here.
Good point.
Because when you travel and you go anywhere, they all ask you about it.
Hmm.
Yeah.
No matter where you go.
It's just not a feel-good movie.
It's too close to home.
Yeah.
Or maybe too soon.
It's too soon.
I mean, who wants to go? Who wants to, like, you know, you go escape to go watch something, you know?
Well, we all lived it, and people in other places, I think, like Mark said, didn't. So maybe they're interested, but maybe not.
Well, he, you know, everything he touches turns to gold. He's, you know, got one hit after another lately.
Right.
I just
watched
a movie of his called The Gambler on Netflix the other day. Pretty depressing, but it was a good movie. It was well done. So here's a scene from the movie. John Goodman, who was, you know,
he's awesome. He's a
you know
good
who
actor,
he is, right?
Yeah.
Former husband of Roseanne on the Roseanne show. So Mark Wahlberg is a degenerate gambler, and you know, so he's in way over his head, and you know, this is he has to come up with like $250,000, or the guys that he previously owes money to are gonna murder him. So he's going to another like loan shark kind of guy, and he says, with the John Goodman character, and he's like big tough guy, and he says, you know, what are you doing here? You know, I've seen you beat up $2 million. Like, why? You know, $2.5 million. He goes, you know what $2.5 million is? He goes, $2.5 million is fuck you money. He goes, $2.5 million. You put it, you buy yourself a modest house, you buy yourself a Jap car that's, you know, 7 years old with low mileage on it. And you put the rest of the money in the bank at 3%, and you know you got this crummy job, and the boss says, you know, is giving you a hard time. You know, you say to your boss, "Fuck you, you don't need their money." You know, you're dating some girl, she's giving you a hard time, and you know what you say to her, "Fuck you," right? Because you got fuck you money, because you're untouchable. Because
just enough to be able to walk away.
Just enough to be able to walk away, right? And
interesting.
So he says, "I'm gonna give you this money, John," you know, to the character. He says, and when you get clear of all this, and if you ever get in that position again, you know, what's the ultimate goal for you right now? he goes, tell me what it is before I'm going to give you this money. He says, to get the fuck you money. Like, it was a pretty good scene. It was a good scene. And I like the movie.
Speaking of good movies, I saw Brooklyn last night. That was a tremendous
Mark saw it as well.
Yep.
Both liked it.
Yeah,
yep.
Loved it.
That was
loved it.
Good scenery.
Yeah.
Between Ireland and New York, back and forth.
Beautiful,
it was good.
Beautiful cinematography, beautiful costumes. The woman on the lead is up for an Academy Award, right? Best Actress, I believe. Yeah, it was beautiful. She did a beautiful job of this transformation from being a very shy, retiring person to, you know, just being more outgoing and confident. It was, you know,
it was about
I think they call that Americanized.
Yeah. In the film, they expressed it that way.
Yeah.
But it was really just like a coming of.
Yeah, you know, no blood and guts, so you could take anyone to it.
It was right. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Family movie, beautiful.
Greg, are you a big movie guy?
I am. I like movies a lot.
Yeah. And don't you feel like Cape Ann Community Cinema is a gem?
Oh, yeah.
And you know what? The Gloucester Cinema seems to be showing more. artsy kind, you know, art house type movies, well, as opposed to what they used to. It seemed like used to be just like, you know, popular
movies.
Stuff.
Yeah, I think they. It's a family owned business there, and I think they do a beautiful job. And they because we're just far enough away from Boston, we get first run movies there as well.
Right.
So
yeah, we're lucky to have both places.
Yes.
Absolutely. The big topic, the leading topic today is we're announcing Greg Bover as an official contributor on Good Morning Gloucester. Long overdue.
Yay,
hey. He's been... Greg, how long have you been submitting the quote of the week?
5 years.
Oh.
5 years of contributions, and we're just getting around to making him an official contributor. Take
yeah.
the, and really
What's up
more
with that, Joe?
Well, you know...
Well, you don't want to be too... hasty about this, you know.
That's really where I recognized the name when you walked in, was the quote of the week.
Maybe,
yeah, it does
maybe
great
this
job.
Should be just, you know, like a trial or something, because you don't know. I
you
might
never
go.
Know.
Well, we've only had a couple of bad experiences. Generally, I have a pretty good feeling for, I don't know why it took so long for you, though, because, I, you know... Generally, I feel out a person and pretty quickly, like, can say, yeah, I want them on my team. And Greg has never checked off any of the boxes that would be like an alarm kind of a box. But it just took us this long to get around to bring it. So what do you think, like, because obviously you'll be able to do post directly your quote of the week.
Yep.
But what other type of things that you are you going to bring to the table?
Well, I'm involved in a lot of stuff around town.
Yeah,
and it will be nice to be able to publicize some of that, make people aware of some of the things that are going on that may not rise to the level of everybody's awareness. Mm-hmm. Awesome Gloucester is one. It's the micro grant foundation that I belong to. There's 20 of us as trustees. We all chip in $50 a month. We collect proposals from...
Oh, that money comes out of your own pockets?
Out of our own pockets, yeah.
That's brilliant. Is it tax deductible?
No.
Really?
No,
why?
We're not a 501c3. We're not an official anything big. It's a worldwide foundation, but each chapter is independent. So there are chapters in Boston and Paris and
Rockport,
New York and... At Rockport and Gloucester are probably the smallest cities mm-hmm. that are towns that have founded
awesome.
Chapters. Mm-hmm. So we collect proposals from the community, and we have a private Facebook page. So the 20 of us vote monthly on our favorite proposals that we've received.
There's a pitch night.
And then the top three vote getters on the Facebook page come to pitch night once a month. So we get three people or groups that come and they make their pitch to the trustees.
It's like Shark Tank.
It's like Shark Tank, yeah. And then we vote again. And it's always really hard because the top three proposals, any of them, are worthy.
Yeah.
You know,
they can resubmit, though, too, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So, and we've had people come three and four times. And you know, they hone their proposal. They find out why they didn't make it. And sometimes it's just because... somebody else
is that, you know,
has something that just grabs your heart, and you know, you got to go with that. And not everybody can win.
Right.
So next month, for instance, it's restricted to just proposals from the high school.
Oh.
So we have one that's at O'Malley, and one that's at the high school. So 2 months of the year there are restricted ones, but otherwise it's open to the whole community.
Hey, if someone drops out, can I jump in? Well, yeah, you know, you talk to your trustees there. I'd love to be part of that.
Oh,
yeah, you should.
How the hell did they not ask me?
You know Sal Zarelli?
Yeah.
Sal Zarelli?
Yeah.
Oh, is he the one, the filmmaker?
Yeah, grew up on the Fort.
Yeah, yeah. That's probably why I didn't get asked.
Came back.
Now I know. Now it all becomes apparent. Okay, I get it. Yeah,
it's a great group.
It is a good group.
It's a really diverse group of people from Gloucester and Cape Ann. You know, I've met people there who I wouldn't otherwise have run into because it's lots of different circles. So, yeah, you should put your name in because there is some turnover in the trustees, but not much.
Yeah, I want to be in.
It's a great thing.
Yeah. So you got that. You also have, you're on the, your project manager for the Adams Grant thing?
Oh, yeah. There's a committee right now that's looking at candidates who would like to be project manager for the Adams grant that was received by the city. Well, the granting partners were Sea Arts, Art Gloucester, and Rocky Neck Art Colony. So those three groups put in for a grant from the Adams Foundation, which is all about seed money for growing arts and culture groups. And this person would be helping to set up an umbrella organization or an umbrella committee that would oversee arts and cultural development for the whole city. Sort of like community development, but focused on the arts. And at the beginning, it's this privately funded thing from the Adams Foundation. But the goal would be to get it to be a city office.
A city position.
So the
God help that person.
So
God help that person.
So some wonderful people have put themselves forward for this project management group, and there's
can you say who they are, or do you, is that, you
know? We're right in the middle of the interviews
selection
right now, and I think I'd rather
not
name any names,
right?
But the committee again is a very broad group of people from all over the city who have some history with arts and culture in Gloucester.
God help them.
And so we're interviewing people now. We'll make a recommendation to the three granting partner organizations, and then they'll ultimately choose somebody to administer this grant.
It reminds me of the, they're always trying to put the Discover Gloucester and the Chamber and the downtown merchants.
Different factions.
The different factions that are always trying to pull from the same, money that becomes available, and God help the person that actually tries to pull them all together, because it's like...
Bullseye.
Oh, God. Yeah.
Well, on the other hand, I don't know. I've only been here 40 years, and so there are
only
skeletons buried in Gloucester that I don't know about. But
newcomer.
But it seems to me that over that time, a lot of organizations that used to just be completely, we're in it for us and screw you, have begun to work together. And I see some organizations that I belong to working with other organizations that they formerly didn't, and that it's not a zero-sum game. Yeah, there's a certain amount of money out there, but if people work together, two organizations going to some donor and saying, we're working together on this, that donor's a lot more likely to give the money than if it was a standalone group that was not...
It's very encouraging. That's encouraging to hear. Yeah,
it's
awesome. Encouraging.
And there are a group of people in Gloucester who see that, including people at the Chamber and Discover Gloucester and a lot of other places, and Maritime Gloucester and the library and the museum, and there's a lot of people out there who are getting it, that we got to work together. There's only a certain amount of money out there, we better share it and approach donors with some kind of common, if you can find common ground, you can move forward.
The work of many light, makes the light. Well, how's the saying go? The quote guy. Give me the quote.
Now you put me on the spot.
No,
many hands make light work.
Right.
Yeah.
And there's not and that the blog is a perfect example of that.
Yeah.
Well, the blog has helped a lot. I think it's one of the engines that pushes that thing, makes people aware of what other people are doing.
Yeah.
You know, you can say, gee, that looks like a great program. I'd like to be part of that.
And it's all because of the team.
Yeah.
You know, it's not Joey Shimotaro. It's not just Kim Smith. Any one of us could disappear, and that blog is still relevant and helpful and useful. Because it's less of a burden to try to put together, because, all these different people that, pitch in and make light work. The blog is way less work for me now than it was 3 years ago.
Really?
Because of all the great contributors that we daily don't miss their posts, like Donna, Kim, and they just nail it every single day. And Nicole Schraft always puts together a great post.
Oh, yeah. She's really good.
You know? So
he's pressuring you now that you're going to be a regular contributor.
Better come up with some good stuff.
Consistency.
Yeah.
No pressure. No, because there is a core of people that post every day. And the people that don't post every day, I know that their role is. And their role, it's not that. But and I appreciate everybody's contributions. So I'm not saying it for that. Just
well, question: what is Greg's time slot going to be?
Probably 1 o'clock. I think the 1 o'clock has been unfilled for a little bit.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure.
That's tremendous. That's a good. Oh,
we're not telling. I think EJ. I'm not sure. I got to talk. EJ. I'm not sure what time she is.
Maybe she's two.
I think she's two.
Two. Yeah.
Whatever. We'll figure it out.
Yeah.
But yeah. And I have to give you a lesson on.
Yeah.
We'll get to all that. All right. That's behind
the
scenes.
But you know
what?
That's a very good time slot because I used to do 2 o'clock, and people were really mad at me when I went to 6 o'clock because they said, "Oh, we love having our a break in the afternoon and seeing what was just posted." So 1 o'clock will be a good time.
Talk about Fishtails.
Oh yeah, that's another thing. That's a program at the Writers Center. Which is another organization in Gloucester that not everybody knows about. But, you know, they say an organization for working writers in a working town, and they really are helping people get their stories out. So they've got a thing for helping veterans to write about their experience. They've got a thing that helps people in the fishing industry, especially older people who have memories that aren't going to last forever. Get their stories out. So one of the programs is a monthly storytelling night, and it's that's run by Maureen Aylward, and I help out. I'm the timekeeper, and so
go ahead.
So
yes.
It's like the Moth radio. I don't know if you've heard the Moth on the radio, but it's a storytelling hour on NPR, and. In Gloucester at Fishtails, people write to Maureen, there's a theme every month, and people stand up and tell a story, a true story, without notes, and just stand up and tell their story for 5 minutes.
And the timekeeper has to. So Ron Gilson would be disqualified because he couldn't. It would be like the Republican debate the other day.
Well.
He'd go way over the time and wouldn't let anyone else talk.
Yeah, okay. There are people who have stories that don't fit into the 5 minute.
I love Ron Gilson. He's awesome.
I'm on the podcast.
I can hear it plain as day. I'm on the podcast, he says. Pete.
He turned the ringer down, did you hear it?
I know, it's beautiful. It's all part of the
Where is that held? Is it held at the Writers' Center?
Well, no, it's gotten way too big for that. We get, 75, 100 people show up for this event, and so lately we've been doing it upstairs at Short and Main.
Yeah, I was there one night and I couldn't get in. We were there just to have oysters and go out for dinner, and we found out it was going on, and they said, you couldn't get in tonight anyway because it was...
Well, it's grown to the point now where we're trying to think of a different place that would have the vibe of Short and Main, a place where some, people in the audience can get a beer or some food or something like that. But I think it's limited to 85 people upstairs.
Mm-hmm. There's no, that's a big crowd. So there's no filter either. People can swear. I mean, they're just.
Oh, there's a lot of that.
I heard it gets pretty racy.
Yeah, it does. One of the ones was all lawyers, and the stories that came out of that were pretty. Some of those were rather blue.
Wow.
The night I was there.
Yeah.
was Ed O'Reilly there?
Yeah, Ed O'Reilly.
Yep.
Jeez, he could sell out a room, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, he.
He just had a grandchild.
Right.
Just a couple days ago, the owners of Short and Main, the owners of Short and Main, are Ed O'Reilly's daughter Nico, name? Amelia, and married Nico Monday or Nico Friday. I forget his last name. And then they just had a baby.
Oh,
yeah.
That's sweet.
Yeah. And beautiful. I mean, so I think he has children that are not much older than his grandchild.
The baby has a 3-year-old uncle.
Right. Which is kind of cool.
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay.
We like that place. It's pretty good.
Yeah.
Good
food.
Yeah. We've been going there quite a bit lately.
I like sitting at the bar and eating the oysters and having a couple appetizers.
And do you know about the first hour in, last hour out program?
Oh.
So the first hour of the day, whatever their time, if they're open from like 4 to 10.
Dollar oysters.
Four, it's a dollar. The first hour and the last hour.
Oh, I didn't know about the last hour part.
The last
I knew about
hour
the first
is a
hour.
Dollar, too.
Wow.
So on Sunday nights, if you go at 8, which is, you know, still a good time to eat dinner, the oysters are a dollar.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
You might want to explore upstairs at the rum line. That's a nice room.
Oh.
Yeah, that's
that
true.
Room?
Yeah.
It may be a little bit bigger than that, but it's really a nice room.
It's got a
nautical theme.
Have you ever been up there?
No.
Oh,
it's very nautical. Like
beams.
It's almost like built like it's the inside of a ship.
Right. When you
ship.
Come up the stairs, it's like the companionway coming out down below on a schooner and stuff. And it's a nice bar. And there's a stage where they have small bands. It used to be a great restaurant in town.
Oh, we'll have to check
that
out.
It's underutilized now, but they use it for birthday parties and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So
you
want to look at
Fred's
that.
Pretty good about, like, if you have a big gang and you want to have a party. He like doesn't even. I don't think he charges you. Then he just wants to.
Yeah, Maine doesn't either. They've been very generous.
Yeah.
So you know there are other places around town, but we only charge $5 to get in.
Yeah.
So it's not like it's a huge moneymaker, and we can't afford to pay a whole lot. But it's gotten very popular, and the stories are just—you would not believe how people blossom when they get up to.
Yeah.
You know, you give them a chance
and
to
get encouraged
be in front of a crowd,
and
some of them just. The last one was tattoos, show and tell. And that was
that's funny.
Awesome.
Oh, that's a
just
fun topic.
Awesome.
Yeah,
and I think one of the ones coming up is going to be...
Was there any misspelled tattoos?
No.
That would have been awesome.
There were a couple that were not so great. You know, people told
names
why.
Have been changed.
People told why they didn't work out and things like that.
There's a great old line by... Jimmy Buffett regarding tattoos. They're nothing more than what seemed like a real good idea the night before, basically.
Yeah.
A cruel reminder of what seemed like a great idea the night before.
Yeah. I like to bring up the food. That we usually have our pastries. We have a green apple today.
Yeah.
Thank you, Kim.
I'm sorry, Chief.
Failed me.
Failed.
Totally failed me. Supposed to bring the pastries.
I'm leaving.
I'm so
might as well
sorry.
Wrap it up right now.
Yeah.
So we got this week. So congratulations, Craig.
Well, thank you.
I'm so happy to have
you
on board.
Welcome.
Yeah. This week, coming up week, big week for Gloucester.
Yep.
And is this the second year at the Seafood
second
Show?
Second year in a row.
Second year in a row, the Seafood Show that the mayor and community development, Innovate Gloucester, working
economic with... Economic development.
Economic development.
Fisheries Commission.
Fisheries Commission.
Wow.
Very involved, and they're going to put together another world-class display promoting, and this is all in junction with the money that they receive to promote the new Gloucester brand. What is it, Gloucester Fresh?
That's going online shortly. It's a new promotion for all the seafood in Gloucester. It's going to take a lot of work, but it's going to be rolled out pretty shortly.
But the booth, on top of the booth at the seafood, the International Boston Seafood Show, have you ever been?
Uh-uh.
Do you know about it?
No.
Okay. It's huge. It's international, and when I say international, it's like one of the biggest shows in Boston all year long, and it is world class. The amount of seafood producers and companies and everything from all over the world is astounding. The restaurants are packed, hotels are packed, the displays and the information that are there. Even if you're not in the seafood industry,
it'd be fascinating.
Be fascinating to anyone.
People go to
man, eat. Woman, or child.
Yeah. A lot of samples.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Great. You leave their stuff, swag bags full of cool stuff. But on top of that, interesting. Like there'll be videos at these different booths of the way this farming fish down like in the South Pacific, and like, you know, like how you think of these places almost like third world countries that have stuff that is so advanced, the way they handle the fish and bring it to market, and different fishing technologies and fish handling technologies is very cool. Anyway, Gloucester for years really didn't have a presence. We not only do we have a presence now that is pretty good, it's over the top, incredible, like worthy of you know, being the whatever number port we are currently. Right.
We're the only city, I think, in the Northeast now that has a booth.
Oh, that's amazing.
New Bedford doesn't. Boston doesn't. I'm sure Portland doesn't. Mm-hmm. So we kind of have the upper hand. Mm-hmm. For whatever reason, they always had booths, but the last 2 years they haven't, and Gloucester's been the only one. So it's been a great leg up for Gloucester to be the only one there.
Mm-hmm. So Mark, on his 25th wedding anniversary, is going to be... is gonna be making an enormous batch of
crap ops.
Oops.
Oh, oops. No, is gonna be making an enormous.
I think I'm gonna go photograph.
You really? Oh, are you going for that?
Yeah.
At Endicott next Saturday.
Huge batch of redfish soup that they served last year, and was it a huge hit? On top of that, and his wife is going to be making it too.
Yeah, your wife's going to.
There's a team of 10 or 12 of us that make it. A few students are going to help.
Sal DiStefano and Maria
They're going to try and make it.
Okay.
And stop by.
But okay, so there's also, they got a 2 billboards. I want you to explain this because you're the one.
The city contracted with a web company a couple of weeks ago to do. They wanted to have some kind of a web video at the booth promoting Gloucester, and so they came to a few of the boats and got a few of the fishermen and took pictures and did interviews, and it was going to be shown at the show. But as an offshoot of that, through connections, they have these video billboards now that you see around, regular elevated 40, but they light up and they change. And
on Route 1?
On Route 1, there's going to be 2 with the city of Gloucester promoting Gloucester's presence at the seafood show.
Oh, that's tremendous.
And they're going to run all week long until the show is over. So
for 10 days?
Wow, that's tremendous.
Yeah,
it's
a lot.
That is primo.
Right. It's really not being run anymore as just the seafood element of Gloucester. It's being run as promoting the whole city of Gloucester for whatever reason.
Right.
And then so the show begins on Saturday. They make all this soup. The show opens on Sunday. And then on Monday, through a lot of work, Gloucester's contacted all the different countries that are involved in the show and invited them to Gloucester for a tour. And they did it last year. And
on a bus, they bring them here.
Cool. We go in and put people from Gloucester on the bus and give them a talk on the way out. And last year it was about 40. This year, I think they've already added a second bus, and it's over 20 countries. And they come and they tour a couple of the facilities. Last year it was the industrial park because there's space available on the economic development part of it. And this year, I believe it's Gorton's, Cape Seafood, and then they're going to do a walk on Main Street and tour the auctions. And then there's a reception at the Gloucester House at noontime. But I think it's up to over 60 people now, and they still had a few countries that hadn't. They said they're coming, but they don't know how many yet. So it's a huge,
huge
undertaking. It's a lot of work, but just like you said with the blog and your awesome and all those different things, it's a lot of people involved, and it's a team effort. And it's this year the booth is twice as big as last year, and any of the seafood companies in Gloucester that could never afford to have a booth can now contact their people that they want to do business with and say, do you want to meet with me for, say, an hour or half an hour at the Gloucester booth? And there's a private area where they can have their own private meeting with their customers without having to pay any money or rent a booth or a hotel room. Or
booths are like 10 grand. Booths, it's not cheap. So,
more,
like,
more.
Captain Joe, it's on more. Way
more.
More, right? So, like, these companies never would be able to do this on their own.
Right.
So, you know, coming together... You know, like we always talk, we just talked about, the like many hands makes light work.
Right.
A rising boat
lifts all tides.
A rising tide lifts all
tides. That all too, yeah, that too. And it's just astounding. The amount of money that, like, the amount of economic impact that this show has, the people that come together and deals that are made and everything is, like, stupid. I mean,
this
thing, whatever they're paying for this booth and the effort they're putting into it, it's going to come back to this town 100
right.
times.
Yeah. Yep. Mm-hmm. And maybe not even, I mean, it will be necessarily in the fact of contracts to whatever business it is. I mean, you could make one contract, it could be a contract that saves your business for the next 5 years, but outside of that, it's a huge tourist attraction for Boston, for people to go to this show, like the food and wine show, and walk around and they get all their bags and stuff and eat, but they say, you know, it's only a train ride to Gloucester. So it's not just fish companies that are coming back as a result of the booth, it's actual foot traffic in the course of the year and the mm-hmm. summer and everything else. Mm-hmm. So it's a win-win for the city.
We donated a ton of GMG stickers.
Oh, great.
And a lot of photographic material for the for
well, other than stuff. The apple, that's all you had left.
It's all you, cousin Kim failed me. Just kidding.
I'm running out to get you a giant breakfast over at
Zeke's. You know I'm teasing. Yesterday I was at my sister's house for St. Joseph's pasta making day, a tradition at her house. Kim, did you go to Gropo's house yesterday?
The Gropo's are just getting their altar ready. So, Nina is working like crazy, and Frank was been in the hospital. So we're just...
All the St. Joseph's families are everything's ramping up right now.
Yeah.
I think I gained 7 pounds yesterday eating Felicia's food. And
I don't know where Nina gets her energy.
She's fantastic.
She's wonderful.
Yeah.
I love her. It was her birthday, actually, yesterday, too.
All those women. All those women. My sisters, they're all beautiful, family-oriented people that keep these awesome traditions alive.
Yep.
Yeah, really, they have a beautiful family. Warning for anyone on the blog that's going to be tired of looking at St. Joseph pictures. They're coming. It's coming. Yeah, deal with it. It's a great tradition. Kim, you want to talk about the Monarchs? You just put a post up yesterday. The big wait. So let me just say something.
Yeah.
We had a terrible Monarch season here.
Right.
But Mexico just is reporting that they're having a monstrous Monarch season in Mexico.
Well, what happens? So I'll try to explain this quickly. Is that the primary migration happens up through the center part of the country. And so if we have wind currents that from west to east, like we do hopefully this year with El Nino, I'm hoping this year we'll get a bigger population this year. So, but primarily the monarchs go up through the center of the country and then migrate back down through the center of the country. And in certain years, we do get a phenomenal migration. This past year, no, we didn't. However, I read reports of them just pouring in off of Lake Erie into Ohio this year. So the monarchs have sort of, they've repopulated about half the amount of forest that is usually populated. So it's 2 years in a row there's been this uptake, which because in 2013 it was the lowest ever recorded. 35 million when in the late 70s it was in the billions. Uh-huh. So now it's about halfway.
It's those evil GMOs.
It's a combination.
Monsanto.
It is a combination of genetically engineered crops as well as global climate change. And it's a whole combination.
Is there a way to predict if they're going to have a good one on the East Coast or not? Ahead of time.
The only thing I can say is I'm trying to look at weather patterns because I've been keeping a record since 2006. And so I'm trying to see, like, if 2006 was an El Nino year. You know what I mean? So it seems logical to me that when we have an El Nino year, we'll have more butterflies.
I guess
so. So we'll see. It would be interesting. There really isn't a great way to predict. I mean, it's because now, as the butterflies are waking up, they go to their first holdover position in Texas, right? And they stay there for a little while. And so monarchs don't really just migrate. That last generation doesn't just migrate 2,000 to 3,000 miles. They sleep through the winter, and then they migrate another 1,000 miles north. One butterfly does. So they're really migrating 3,000 to 4,000 miles total. And then if the conditions aren't... Last year, when they arrived in their first holdover position, the climate was fabulous, and there was tons of... it was a perfect climate for them, so that helped them a lot last year, too.
Where is it in Texas? Is there a certain area?
Yeah, and I'm not exactly sure where it is, what that... But it's right on the... it's northern on the Gulf area, so... But it's northeastern Texas.
Did anybody see any clips from the... from the Republican debate?
Yes.
You saw the video clips?
I thought that was Saturday Night Live. Just on early.
I'm not, you know, we're not going to talk about, you know, political candidate. All I want to say is, has anyone been more embarrassed by what we have to pick from than this particular? Is this a low point, do you think?
Where is Pat Paulson? We have to bring back Pat Paulson. He was before your time, Joe.
Well, was that? Was
he would be
more
a fitting candidate right now. But we're not getting political.
He's
a comedian.
Oh, okay. I don't know.
He used to be on the Smothers Brothers comedy show all the time in the 70s, and he was a...
Ran for president.
He ran for president more than once. I mean, he was a little... he would be a worthy candidate right now, possibly.
Jesus Christ, it's unbelievable. I just can't. That Republican...
We watch it all the time, because Tom loves CNN, so he has it on all the time. So we see it all...
But I don't... Like, every single... on both sides... It's okay, we started out with the... On both sides of the aisle, I feel like every single candidate has... fatal flaws
has
to me.
Fatal
flaws. Like I feel like we're completely doomed for the next 4 years, no matter who gets it.
Yeah. Well, there is, I think there's one saving grace. It seems like if you go back, it doesn't matter anymore who becomes president, because they lose all their power once they're president. So that's the saving grace of someone possibly terrible getting in there. They can say whatever they want now and get elected, but they really don't have the power that
whatever they say they're going to do. Jesus. I don't know. Crazy.
Still a sad state of affairs, though.
Kim, why don't you talk a little bit about 10 Pound Island and what's going on out there?
Let's see. I think what I think happened, it all stemmed from just a simple comment in the newspaper that said that the Recreational Boating Committee was... recommending perhaps that dockage could be created at 10 Pound Island.
Transient dockage? Or for local dockage?
Local, I believe it's, they didn't say, so okay. I don't really know.
From what I understood, it could be anyone. Okay.
To use the island, not dockage, to keep boats there.
Right.
Oh, okay.
Just
was their idea.
For anybody who wants to visit
anyone.
The island.
Residents.
Anybody who wants to visit, who wants to just, you know, row their boat over or bring a kayak over and... So I think some people got a little frightened about that, the idea, because there are a lot of nesting birds there, and it's a wonderful wildlife habitat. So I wrote a little post, which is coming out tonight, about the historically what 10 Pound Island, and I did this really nice, a good time.
Wasn't there a windmill on there at one time?
I didn't see that.
I think we have an old drawn...
Oh, drawing! That would be interesting. Well, it was from the early history. It was used to from the 1600s to the early 1800s. Rams and sheep grazed on it, and then there was the lighthouse was built, and then the fish hatchery. But even before the fish hatchery, it was the first Coast Guard air station.
For seaplanes.
And their job was to. Capture rum runners that was during Prohibition. I want people in the community to understand that the whole island is in a transitory state, ecologically speaking, because you know, first it was trees, which were probably cut down a long time ago, and then, you know, became rocky, and then the grasses grew, and that's what the sheep grazed on, and then we had industry out there. So now there's all this wonderful shrub and underbrush that birds love to nest in. But if the land isn't managed, it will eventually turn into a forest, and birds won't nest there anymore anyway.
Well, different birds will.
Or different birds, but probably not. It won't be ideal for shore birds. And this is the part. This is the type of habitat that Massachusetts is losing all the time, because meadows and, you know, flat open areas and things like that make ideal sites for houses. And then oftentimes they revert back to being forests. So if we don't do anything about Ten Pound Island, it will eventually become a forest. So why not, you know, work together with the Recreational Boating Committee and, you know, create dockage for people who want to go over there, and then make trails to go through it. The whole island doesn't just have to be for birds, you know what I mean? Like, you could have areas where there could be wildlife areas, and we have all these great examples in Massachusetts, and especially, you know, north of Boston, to look at to protect bird species, but also make it accessible for people to use too. So make Ten Pound Island.
I was just in Mexico. I went to Tulum,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right? Archaeological
site
or whatever,
right.
And a lot of, you know, they have. So they have areas,
right,
that are protected.
Right.
But I mean, a ton of people are going through that space, and there's walking paths, and they have, you know, little wrought iron stakes with ropes going,
right,
across. So they say, don't pass this
don't
line
pass
because
that.
This is where the turtles are going to come and go.
Right.
Because, you know,
right,
there's a beach right there that
there.
They lay their eggs and stuff.
Right.
And, you know, it's very, but everybody, people get to use it too.
Right. Like think of the educational opportunities available there on Ten Pound Island. Think how, you know, what a great place it would be for families.
Mark, you
to go
see,
and
when
explore.
You go fishing, you see a lot of birds there. You see the egrets out there.
Yeah,
you
the
see
egret, the egrets stay there. I mean, a lot of gulls, cormorants. In the wintertime, when if we have cold winters, if there are any bald eagles around, that's where they would usually stay, in the tallest trees
awesome.
Out on Ten Pound.
And I think the night crown.
Black crowned night herons.
Right.
They
have nests.
We have a
so
different name for them, right?
Do they have a
shitpokes?
Shitpokes, yeah.
Yeah.
I call them porky pants.
Yeah.
I'm thinking of Misery Island. And
I was going to mention
off
that.
Off of
Beverly Farms, yeah.
Where there are trails, but a lot of it is left undeveloped.
Undeveloped, right.
But so Ten Pound Island belongs to the city?
Yes.
Is that right?
It used to belong to the federal government, and then when they decommissioned it, then they gave it to the city. So
the last time I was out there, it was mostly poison ivy.
90%.
Yeah. Well, see, poison ivy is something that brings the birds, because poison ivy first of all, it has wonderful blossoms on it that bring that attract butterflies and bees. And then it bears fruit. So, for example, like on Plum Island, when I work with the landscape architects on Plum Island, poison ivy is on the list of approved plants, where beech roses are not, because that's not a native plant. And I'm not suggesting anybody plant
Rosa
poison
rugosa,
yeah,
right, beech roses.
But I'm not suggesting anybody plant that. I'm just saying, there could be trails through that. So
all
know,
of these islands are covered.
Yeah,
I grew up on Misery
right.
Island, because I grew up in Manchester.
Right.
And Kettle Island.
Yeah.
They're
and
all covered
Magnolia,
with poison ivy.
Almost totally poison ivy.
Right, and
yeah,
no one's allowed on Kettle anymore.
Well,
the Audubon Society took that over, and you're not supposed to go on Kettle Island at all.
Really?
As a result of the egrets and the the ibises are there too, the black ibises and stuff. So, I mean, you see people use that beach on the inside with kayaks and stuff, but really, I think the signs posted up there, they don't want people going on Kettle anymore.
So I have a...
Well, that's too bad.
Al Bazanson submitted this 19th century Gloucester windmills. The illustration appears in History of the Town and City of Gloucester, Cape Ann, Massachusetts, 1892, by James R. Pringle, who wrote, "A sketch of the town in 1817 was drawn by Captain John Beach from a point in the harbor opposite Ten Pound Island off Pavilion Beach. Standing out prominently in the foreground was an eight-sided wooden windmill erected on the site now occupied by the Pavilion Hotel. This had been built in 1814 by Ignatius Weber, and its long arms fitted with sails made it a conspicuous object and gave the town quite a foreign aspect. It was subsequently removed to a position on Fort Square, where it became a familiar landmark, being destroyed by a fire a few years ago.
So that wasn't on
that
him.
Wasn't.
That wasn't
no.
on
No. Another, oh, here it is. Another windmill of more modern design is prominent on Five Pound Island in an 1893 photograph by Martha Hovey, reproduced in Wharf and Fleet by Gordon W. Thomas.
So and Five Pound Island became part of the
fishery
area.
Right. So they, okay, so it wasn't Temple Island. Okay, well, there you go.
Well, I found a lot of photos and put them in the post of what it looked like.
That'd be a great post.
Yeah.
Thank you for doing
so
that.
So were those windmills, what were they powering? Were they grinding grain or pumping water or...
Mm. Or running the lighthouse.
What were they there for?
Oh.
On Five Pound Island, that was where they had the goats, right? Didn't they have goats?
Yes.
On 10 Pound, they had... I know on 10 Pound, they had rams and sheep. So did they have goats on 5 Pound? I don't know.
They used the goats to eradicate poison ivy a lot.
Today they do.
Because they eat poison ivy.
Today they do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then it was probably sheep that they had as their own for food and everything else.
Well, on 10 Pound Island, you could only have rams. And anybody who brought a sheep out there was fined or something like that. Yeah,
yeah.
I read that in a book. It was interesting. I don't know why.
Huh.
But it's also thought to be named... 10 Pound Island, because pounds were another name for the haddocks or something that the sheep were kept in, and it was just the right size for 10 sheep lots out there. So, anyways, it's interesting.
Yeah, very interesting.
And also, there's a super famous
pounds like a dog pound.
Right.
Oh,
yes.
Right.
Also, there's a super interesting sea serpent story from out there that was told by a very credible person. So, anyways, it's very interesting.
Sea serpent. But we're trying to say that there was a sea serpent? Is that what you're saying?
Well, that's
is that what you're alluding to?
Yes, that's what I'm alluding to.
Okay, interesting.
Well, I have to tell you sometime about the creature I saw in Niles Pond sometime.
Bigfoot?
Oh, boy, they're in the freshwater, too?
Bigfoot.
I don't know what I saw.
I'm headed for higher ground.
Tell me about the 1 Billion Rising event that you covered for us.
Yes, that was... I don't feel I covered it that well because I was just dropping off something for Safatia and I stayed and I took photos. But it was really just, it was a very moving event. And people, it was a whole group of people coming together. It was the survivors. It was the Men Against Violence. I don't know all the names of all the groups, the whole coalition that were there, but they did a tremendous job. And I think that they usually have like more somber meetings. So this one making noise for 1 Billion Rising was more of an uplifting and people coming together type of thing.
What was it for? Domestic abuse?
Yeah, for domestic abuse and prevention. And Chief Campanella spoke very eloquently, so did Safatia. She was the hostess there in the City Hall foyer. And I put up a lot of little snippets of videos, because Instagram videos can only be 15 seconds long, so I just tried to edit them so that they were, you know, more the profound things that people said. And it was very, very well done.
Tony Gross was there?
Tony Gross was there, Steve LeBlanc was there.
You did a nice post highlighting the heroes.
Yeah, I was thinking about starting a series for Gloucester called Gloucester Heroes or Local Heroes or Unsung Heroes.
You know, this
like
a bit.
That.
You know, I'd be careful only because and these guys do tremendous work on behalf of the city and for the love of the city. So not to diminish them, but the word hero. There's been like in the last year or so, I see a lot of people. When you post that, a lot of people sometimes in social media, you get a lot of backlash.
Oh, really?
People saying, really, heroes?
Oh,
like,
really?
You know,
oh,
we reserve
really?
Heroes for,
oh, really?
You know, people, you know, like,
well,
people that save people. And,
but
you know,
if you say,
like that.
Unsung heroes, perhaps, and that, you know, denotes, well, maybe there's another word that we could use, but just like people who, you know, just are constantly doing good things for the community and, you know. Like everybody here in this room that I'm with.
Some place between good eggs and heroes.
Yeah. Pillars of the community.
No, it's just like when it's funny, like every like there's always these people that are looking to pick some everything apart. And not to say that these people are not fantastic people, but like it's just like it gives them the opportunity to put a negative spin on it.
Yes.
You know, like,
Yeah. Well,
heroes wear uniforms. Right.
Yeah. That's. I think that's part of the thing.
Firemen, you know, not necessarily sports uniforms either.
Right.
That's true.
That's true. Well, that's a good way of looking at it.
Yeah.
So let's think of another word.
Yeah. All right. There you go. St. Patty's Day. It was a very curious date. That there's a fundraiser for our Italian American mayor.
I think
on St. Patrick's Day.
It's a great idea.
Joseph Oshimataro.
I am all in on St. Patrick's Day.
Joe has been to Boston with me on St. Patrick's Day before.
Oh, raised a lot of hell.
He fit in.
Raised a lot of hell.
Yep.
I am a huge fan of St. Patrick's Day. I'm jealous of the Irish for having,
a
whole serious holiday where no one goes to work and gets shit-faced. I think it is the all-time greatest. Fiesta is sort of like that, right?
It's more consistent than Mass, that's for sure.
Oh, yeah.
Nobody misses St.
Patrick's.
More
well-attended.
Right.
Yeah.
Nobody misses it.
God bless. God bless St. Patrick's Day and the people that came up with that one. Yeah. And so Safathi's having a fundraiser. And I think a lot of people are going to go. I think it's going to be a great time.
Yeah, I think it'll be fun. I'm looking forward to it. And it's like an all-day thing, right? So you can just go.
Oh, is it?
Time,
yeah,
right?
I think it's 11 to 3 for lunch and then 4 to 9 for dinner.
So you can
oh, that's great.
Right.
So you can still go to the rum line then.
You can go to the moon, Joe, and back.
No, the rum line is tradition. You know?
Right, you could start there, get fortified, get some good food, and then go to the rum line.
Yeah.
I've already heard about breakfast at O'Neill's in Salem, so I don't know where it's going.
Could be anywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's great. We all get a chance to go and celebrate.
Yep.
It'll be a good time. All right. Anybody else have anything they want to talk about? Are we good?
Yeah.
There was a lobster connection to the awesome, too, because a couple of years ago, Scott Swicker won one of the awesome grants to work on the soft lobsters, to promote soft lobsters.
Yep.
Yeah, early on.
Really?
Yep. Him and his helper, the kid that works on the boat with him.
Was it Max?
And then they went and collaborated with, no. Scott, his name's Jay from Beverly.
Okay.
They went and collaborated with Beth down at the MLA and worked on how to promote soft lobsters and stuff during the summer season.
Great.
Yeah.
Love it. All right. Well, Greg.
Anything that makes Gloucester more awesome.
It is. It is
especially
great.
Especially things connected to the marine industry and education and arts and culture. So.
Didn't the backyard growers? Did they grow on?
Backyard growers. Yeah. The list is really quite amazing, and one of the reasons I really love being involved in it is because I find out about stuff going on in Gloucester that you otherwise wouldn't hear, because usually the people who come to us are just starting out with their idea, and they need a little
seed money,
get-going money, and you know, $1,000 doesn't go all that far these days, but sometimes it's the difference between a program getting going and just being somebody's idea. Mm-hmm. So,
and you know, it's funny, like you really distill it because you get 20 different great ideas and you're really distilling, and this, so 20 different people, there's 20 people,
20 trustees.
20 trustees are really thinking about all of this, and the money gets funneled into a, you know, into a great thing.
So it gets the people with the ideas together too to feed off the other people's ideas.
Yeah.
Well, and Pitch Night is a public thing. Right now, we're also doing that upstairs at Short and Main, and it's the third Monday of the month, so people can come and just watch. It's a good entertainment.
Do you have a website for that, or is it goes through Facebook?
There's a website for Awesome Gloucester.
I have to look it up. Okay.
.org, and so people can just come and watch, and in the summertime, we're at the Gloucester House.
I really want to be a part of this thing. I think it's so awesome. I think
it's incredible.
It'd be really a
lot of energy. Yeah. It's kind of like being on a scholarship committee. You know, you have to choose among people who are all worthy.
Oh, here's a good question.
You have to say no, but we say it's not no, it's just not right
now.
Right.
Yeah.
So come back and do it again.
All right, here's a question. And I just thought of this because when I was younger, I always had an idea in my mind. if you were gonna have a Kim Smith scholarship, what would be the criteria? A high school senior going into college, and you're gonna be $500 or whatever. What would be the criteria for the selection? Everybody's gonna go around. Go ahead.
Oh, okay. So I guess I would say somebody who has an interest in, you know, their community, and especially the natural history and horticulture and botany of their community. So.
Okay, there you go. Yeah. Greg?
Well, I'm on the Fishbox Derby Committee, and we give at least $1,000 a year to anybody who's been a former Fishbox Derby racer. So every year we have three or four kids who are graduating, and they submit their application, and we ask them to write what the Fishbox Derby meant to them. Wow. And so it's based on scholarship, you know, what they're, and it's based on need, and it's based on their essays about their experience with the Fishbox Derby. And it's a killer every single year, because all the kids are worthy.
Yeah.
You'd like to give it to all of them, but there's only so much money. Some years, you know, if it's only two or three and we've got the dough, we give them to
If you give a scholarship, is that tax deductible?
I don't know.
It's already, the Fishbox Derby is a 501c3, so that money is not out of our pocket.
If we wanted to do a good one in Gloucester one, would that come off the taxes?
You'd have to be set up as a
501c first?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right, Pete, you want to...
I can't talk, but he just said.
You don't want to... Okay, Mark.
I would hope it would be something involved with the ocean or the industry surrounding it, whether it's a kid that's in high school that maybe doesn't want to have anything to do with the fishing industry but wants marine biology, or one of the maritime schools, which I would always think is a great option.
Someone
kids
that
want to
be
around the ocean.
Yeah.
Yeah. Get your education, and then you can still come back and do some, but maybe have them serve some kind of apprenticeship around the city, not just on a boat thinking he wants to go fishing, but do an apprenticeship at the wharfs, maybe up at NIMS to see the other side of it before he even, you know, craft it all into the scholarship application and get more rounded to see what they might really want to do in the end.
Is Mass Maritime still in operation?
Yep.
And where are they? Are they at Woods Hole?
Buzzards Bay.
Buzzards Bay?
Buzzards Bay, yep.
What are some of the things?
So there's really three of them that are on the East Coast. There's Buzzards Bay, there's Kings Point, New York, and there's Maine Maritime. Are the three that...
Castine, yeah.
That compete for the kids.
Yeah.
But Kings Point is an appointment.
Is it what?
Political appointment. Kings Point.
From a kid?
It's a government school.
Oh, what do you mean?
Merchant Marine.
Oh, okay.
But it's an appointment, you know.
Like Annapolis or West Point, you have to...
Right, you get letters from congressional people to...
Oh, okay.
Help you get in and all that.
What are some of the things they teach at Mass Maritime?
All kinds of engineering.
They've got their own ship down there. It's a really interesting place. If you go through the canal, Cape Cod Canal, it's at the southern end of the canal. And it's a big school.
It's a big school, and
is it more for merchant marines to become a merchant marine, or is it other fish? Is there any fishing part of it anymore?
No.
Did it used to
be? It's everything that would be involved in working on a big ship.
Where was the place that Louis Williams went to?
URI used to have a fishery school.
Right.
I don't think they do.
And he learned about fish, like there was fishing.
Yeah, there was net making, there was everything in that. Yeah. But Mass Maritime is everything to do with the running of a big ship. And some of the kids that get out, and you could be a cadet to become an officer, you know, work for a cruise line or something. And so you can do it all. A lot of the kids come out of there and they end up, they go to sea for a couple of years, but then they work as engineering and steam plants at colleges or hospitals or anything else because they get tired of going to sea, but you have a career out of it. They're great schools.
One of the guys who died when that ship went down...
El Faro?
Yeah. He was a Mass Maritime graduate.
Yeah, and I think there was 10 or 11 that came out of Maine Maritime on that one.
I always say, when you know, we see some kids come down to the wharf and they want to, you know, go lobstering or fishing or something like that, and you know, maybe they don't have it or something, but they're just kind of floundering around. They don't really have a direction.
No pun intended.
Yeah, exactly. No pun intended. But they don't really have any direction. I always try to steer them into merchant marines,
yeah,
because just you hear about the salaries that they pay these people, like one or two years out, they're making like $75,000 a year or more. And like within like 5 or 6 years, they're making $100,000. And the schedule, I don't know if it's so conducive for family life because
it's tough.
A couple months. Yeah, but there's different levels. Isn't there different ones? Like you could be gone for a month and then back for a month, or gone for 3 months, back for 3 months?
Yeah, you could come out of the maritime schools and work on tugboats locally, Boston, New York, and be 2 weeks on, 2 weeks off, maybe home some nights of the week. And then there's other unions where you have to have a day off for every day you're at sea. So you're 3 months on, you then have 3 months vacation.
And it could be, and the benefits and everything. In this day and age, like, it always astounds me when someone says, oh, there's, you know, there's, can't find a job. Like, anyway, sounds great. This is a great podcast. Greg, congratulations being on board. Mark, thank you for your contributions. Pete, it's always nice to have you. Just for moral support.
There you go.
And Kim Smith, another Gloucestercast in the books.
You like the cue cards or something? Thank you.